Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Because, like nowhere else in the world, historically, many young people who grew up in urban America first face certain challenges, socially, economically, and even developmentally. It's necessary that our conversation be germane to how to embrace them and to empower them through the process we commonly call education. And what we are doing tonight is identifying some means and ways by which we can cut through the red tape and the chase to meet the needs of even this particular group or population of learners. Yours truly, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, welcome you to another episode of Talk Straight. This March 6, 2018, and we encourage you to give us a call here. The number is 657-383-0944. In case you're just tuning in to us, our regular format is to offer a monologue, which serves as a framework and basis for our conversation. As I've said in times past, if for any reason we need to go back and to research and find any other factual support for any claims that we make, we'll be happy to do so and come back to you and make those corrections accordingly. I don't expect everybody to agree with me, and we shouldn't expect that all of our callers would agree with one another, but we do expect that we show respect to one another and deference to their position. The hope is that we can all learn together ultimately. But we will welcome you to give your comment and to pose your questions. You can do so via Facebook or here, right here at the platform. Give us a call, 657-383-0944. Be happy to entertain you. We're grateful for all of you that have been keeping up with us on our live stream with Facebook as well as on the podcast platform here with blogtalkradio.com. Also in my regular Facebook group there, we had a conversation with a gentleman. This is a good lead into my monologue. After our last show, and you know, we began the month of March talking about three pillars of a culture, a community, and we looked at education, we looked at economic and theology as three essential pillars. So tonight, as with Thursday night, this coming Thursday, we will be focusing on the impact of education on our community or our culture, society, and its relevance and importance. Thursday, we will pick up and talk about another aspect of the role that education plays, that being how it is to help formalize the acculturation of our young people, okay? And hopefully them growing into old people. make a long story. So that's our intention, is to be able to do so, and we hope that you can join us tonight in our conversation. All right, having said that, we're going to go into our monologue. Pastor Ricky Waller, we hope that he'll be on with us, our regular panelist. Sometime he's doing mission work, and we appreciate it. We did a lot of that together, but we hope he'll be able to join us tonight. If not, we'll make do. One of our regular callers, Ms. Nicole, has joined us tonight, and you're welcome again to give us a call here, 657-383-0944. Saying that again, we're going to go ahead into our monologue, and it shouldn't be very long tonight. How to educate urban American youth to be successful citizens. Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 through 7. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest. Sounds like a 24-hour job to me that somebody serves as a teacher. Let's talk about generally what are educational aims. There's a certain jargon or professional language that is used by trained educators. And oftentimes, parents and community members are not familiar with these things. And so you kind of speak over their head. They get lost by them. But there are generally primary focus and aims for having an educational system. And there's history about education in America. And, of course, we talk about public education. We talk about private. And then there's a genre of homeschooling. And I think Sister Nicole has a perspective on that. And we look forward to hearing from her tonight in that regard. But generally, the aims of education are thus. It provides a statement for learning, and it lays out objectives that provide certain benefits. When you give a specific statement of purpose, and you provide objectives for what is to be done, or ultimately what is to be learned, these are the benefits. They help the teacher in the classroom to design the course, all right, and the content. Now, you heard me talk last week and previously about the fact that education is simply a process, and in this process, it simply identifies or deals with teaching and learning. But what it does not do very well, or what it's not intended to do, is to deal with people's social issues, their economic issues, their emotional issues, and things outside of the structured learning process for a public education or in the public domain. All right, but they do provide guidelines for teaching on part of a teacher and receiving information for a student. Okay, it lays out certain methods, right? And it also provides an assessment, a way of determining if they are successful at teaching and the child learning. Now, we know that learning is defined as a change in behavior after being exposed to knowledge or information or instruction. That's how you know if someone learned, because you can see a measurable change after they've been introduced again to that information. Educational aim or mission helps to communicate the intent or the reason behind the coursework that's being taught, such as math and reading and science and even different subtopics of math, additions. subtraction, exponential, things of that nature, okay? But it helps to communicate what it is you're trying to get across to the learner themselves, all right? Then to help identify what resources are available to support the learner as instruction is given, be it a textbook, be it a supplementary book, or it could be a tutor or something of that nature. Those are the type of things in a structured environment you have in an educational system, all right? But we're specifically thinking about now young people who have barriers to their learning, okay? Can you just do the same thing that a child who is apt about learning, interested and fired up and ready to go and is courageable, do you do the same thing with them? But with the child that have distractions, that have emotional barriers and breakdowns that distract them from this formal process we just laid out, does that work? Are you going to be able to successfully meet your aims for your education? All right, now let me talk about a couple of roles. Okay, sometimes it's easily assumed that in the educational process, it just involves the teacher in the brick-and-mortar classroom. Not so. I just mentioned to you that homeschooling is another option, private schools and things of that nature. Then there's a concept called schools without walls, where individuals learn from experiential learning, right? We're not going to really get into that too much, but I do want to let you know that learning is a 24-hour process, and every experience is a teachable moment. The question is, how prepared are individuals to take the circumstances and translate them into a lesson or an instruction? All right, so the first and foremost important role in the learning process is the parent. What? Yes, the parent. In fact, one of the most important influences in a child's life, all throughout their growth and their lifespan, is the example of their parent. Whether that's good or bad, I don't care if their parent is an alcoholic or a drug addict. There is a natural bond that comes there, and there are barriers oftentimes, right? Their parent may not be literate, may not know very well themselves, but they love their children, and their children love them. Now, the catch here is we must make sure we are aware that you can't cut the parent out of the educational process, because they know more about that baby, that particularly that mother that they care for 9 months, than you do. Now, they may not have been happy with how they brought them here, but they know how they got here. They can tell that story. Okay? The parent is the first teacher that that child will ever know. And oftentimes when parents are absent, the child may have been taken by child services when it was born, or the parent may have died and so forth. Someone else has filled in as a surrogate parent. Again, there is a special bond as they grow and develop, and there are key experiences that that parent knows about, such that when that child goes into the formal educational setting, that they are able to bring that lesson. In fact, a good principal will have new parents to their school write some sort of biographical sketch of their child to give them an idea of who it is they have in front of them as a learner. Now, in the public school setting, it serves as an important resource for not only the child but the parent, because we talked about that formal process and the formal training that teachers receive in their education. Well, these resources are put together and they are strategically laid out in order to meet certain objectives, certain goals and objectives, and receive certain outcomes. Well, this becomes a major resource to the parent as their child, who is like a glass that has been poured into halfway. Often we ask the question, is the glass half empty or half full? Well, often you don't know. Sometimes that child comes to your classroom full in a traditional public school, especially in urban America. And the teacher don't know how full it is. You overpour, you got a big mess. And we see that too often in the public school system. So it's important that the parent and the teacher communicate with one another. That's the point we want to make here, that the parent play a significant role. They can provide key insights and details into the motivation for learning or the lack thereof for that child. We're talking about children who are challenged by socioeconomic barriers in urban America, and their parents don't really understand what bewilders them, what bothers them. Then you have to go another step to help educate the parents to articulate what they have seen and observed about their children. So education is not just germane to the child learning, but quite often the parent has to learn too how to articulate their observations for their children, the good and the bad. All right. There's another partner in the educational process, a key role, and that is the formal role of the teacher. Teacher in society serves as someone who has went through a process of being educated and trained to learn how to develop or how to understand the development of curriculum or materials that are listed to be taught in order to make sure that children from a certain age gain certain types of information. We call that content material. Okay, those teachers are introduced to that, and they're introduced to well-known best practice strategies to transfer that information into the mind and experience of the child as a student learner. As I just said to you, though, today more than ever, it has become imperative that teachers avail themselves to the fact that they must work with the parents. And they must use the parent as a teaching tool and a resource. And the parent must use the teacher as a major resource for their child's education. But the teacher is often certified in a particular content area, which means they've studied in undergraduate school and they've went through formalized teacher training and they have a formal understanding about this particular subject, such as math or such as reading or English or science or history, those type of things, social studies. They spend a good deal of time focusing on this. Now, the problem that many teachers in the public school setting have is that they've never had much psychology other than educational psychology often, or they never had much sociology or social work training. But they find that their students require that when they come to them, so there's a problem. And this is particularly what we're talking about when we talk about the needs of urban American youth. The gentleman asked me, why do we have to say urban? Can't we focus on everybody? Well, I'll tell you, if I'm shot in the chest with a bullet and they roll me into the emergency room, there's nothing wrong with my feet, except for the fact that they're a little smelly. I don't want the doctor fooling around with my smelly feet. I want you to immediately go and take care of that bullet and try to spare my life. Likewise, we must realize that we must be focused and deliberate in our intention to teach these babies, these young people, these youth that have been caught up by urban circumstances. Let's be honest about it. Let's pull the wool off folks' eyes. When we talk about urban, we're talking about minority, poverty-stricken individuals who live in the hood, in the ghetto, most often. Okay? Now, we see that urban is changing with gentrification, but it just moved from one place to another, but the same conditions are still there. All right? Lest I digress too much. Teachers are individuals who should have good, strong character and who are able to model for their children, the babies that are in front of them. Sometimes some people ain't got no business being in front of our children, I'll tell you, because they're not the best example for them. Okay? And that's something that as a culture, as a community, we have to look at. Who is it that needs to be and don't need to be in front of our children. We're going to get into it. I see our phone lines are lit up already. And we're going to get to everybody. Now, we talked about the role of the purpose of education. There's some specific aims. And formally, it's supposed to ensure that everybody get an equal education. You heard us talk about in the last episode about the 1896, with the Plessy versus Ferguson case, where they said as long as it's separate but equal, it's all right. And we heard that that was turned over in 1954 with the Brown versus Board of Education, Topeka, Kansas, where Thurgood Marshall was the attorney for the NAACP, and they won that landmark case, and it forced them. But in 1955, the Supreme Court only said they stopped that with all deliberate spree. What does that mean? Truth of the matter is, schools across America, urban America, have become resegregated by default because of a thing called white flight. Those who can afford to leave the public schools start private schools, and they left a large group, a bulk of young people in urban America, big cities, to attend public schools. And now many of them are struggling to meet their annual budgets, and many of them struggle to meet what they call annual yearly progress, or being able to show how children have improved in their reading and math and so forth from one level to another. NAEP is a major indicator of that, right? And so what we're saying is that there are certain outcomes that are expected. Education in America is a roughly $300 billion industry. A lot of people are making money. But when we look at the outcomes, we have to ask ourselves, are we wasting money or are we really making a difference? But more importantly, what must we do different to reach these babies, these young people in urban America, in order for them to become productive citizens of our society? Hope tonight we learn from my monologue that it's two parts to that. The first part of instruction started home. And if the home don't have it, we're going to talk about that on Thursday, okay, one of the roles of education in terms of how it helps parents to position themselves. We're going to talk about that in large detail on Thursday. Right now we just want to give you a basic backdrop of education and its role in society or within our community, our culture, all right? So just briefly, let me just hit these outcomes. Learning outcomes describe what it is that the students should know by the end of their kindergarten year, first grade, second grade, third grade. And usually each state has what they call a blueprint. I know in the state of Tennessee it's called the Blueprint for Learning. And it is a book that identifies what the standards for learning are, what the benchmarks are, and what the evaluation tools are, okay, what the measurement tools are, okay, what the expectations are. And these outcomes help guide the teacher in their instruction. But guess who else it helps? It helps the parent to know where the teacher should be making progress, where instruction should be given, and where the child should be at a certain time of the school year, because there are certain standards that should have been met. Now, when a child have barriers to learning, it's difficult for the teacher to keep them and the rest of their students there unless they have specialized instruction or interventions for certain barriers to instruction. And that's a major issue. I won't get into all the weeds of that tonight, but again, what's most important is that the parent and the teacher must partner together, because the parent is the first teacher. For good or bad, they know the child better than the formal teacher in the brick-and-mortar classroom. All right, man, we have a long... We're fired up here tonight already. Let me go to our phone line. In case you're just joining us, the number, this is Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Doctor. The number is 657-383-0944. Get in where you fit in. Pastor Waller, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm good, Pastor Doctor. How you doing?
Mighty fine. Glad you can join us tonight. I understand you're in and out, but just stay with us as much as you can now. We got 1098 on the line. I know he ready. I know this. How you doing, sir?
Good, good.
All right, sir. All right, sir. And look, hit my main man right here, Pastor Wilder, 1080. 1080, what do you say about it?
Yes, all right, good evening, gentlemen.
All right, right. Glad you could join us. And here's my sweetheart right here, Pastor Wilder, straight out of Peoria, Illinois, 8112. What do you say about 8112?
I say I love you guys, and how are you tonight?
Wonderful, wonderful. And I would be remiss, Pastor Wilder, if I didn't recognize the one and the only, Miss Nicole 0405. Welcome tonight to our discussion.
Hey, everyone.
Hello.
All right. Let's get right into it, guys. Let's get right into it. We had some heated discussions last week and the week before last, and I know 8112, she ready. Look, she be locked and loaded. What do you say about 8112? Lead us off tonight. What do you think about the monologue?
I think that you are correct where it starts at home, but the teachers are also appearing for 8 hours of a day with a lot of kids, and that's hard.
That's true.
And they are trained, and some are not trained properly, true.
Yes.
And, so when sometimes kids, I've had some of my own a long time ago, come home and say, well, Mama, the teacher didn't listen to me. I told the teacher what so-and-so did, and I was telling her I couldn't understand my homework, and they don't reach and dig a little further to make the child understand. Everybody is not on the same wavelength of understanding.
That's
there's
true.
A lot of things
true.
Right today I don't understand.
Okay.
And it may
okay.
take me a little longer than some others to catch on, but eventually it may click in.
Yeah, yeah. I want to go to Nicole because I know Nicole has I know she has a lot to say about this because she, and I don't think she mind me mentioning this, but she homeschools her children, and she's seen some progress by doing that. Nicole, will you share with us a little bit about that and respond to my monologue for me, if you don't mind?
Yes, sir. First of all, my grandkids have been through a lot, and I have custody of them. And
okay.
I see they learned was kind of messed up because of the training they was dealing with the parents. But when I began to take custody of my grandkids, I began to learn they have special needs and they have problems. This out of my control, you know. One of them has cerebral palsy.
Okay.
When I began to help this little girl began to do all kind of things because I taught her how to do them. But when she went to school here in the state of Tennessee, she began to be behind worse than she was. And she wasn't writing or nothing. And I was thinking it was me, but it wasn't me because I was doing everything I supposed to do. I help her with therapy. I help her with her homework. And then come to find out, it was certain things that I would talk to the teacher about with my concerns and would tell the teacher, please don't hold her hand. Let her learn how to do things for herself because she's not a baby. If you teach her, she will learn. So out of the whole year that she was in that school system, she did not learn how to write or nothing.
Wow.
She learned a few ABCs and stuff like that. That was fine, but that wasn't good enough. When I began to realize and understand they're twins. One of the twins come home and she was always having a bad report, and I was wondering like, Kamaya, what did you do? She said, Granny, it wasn't me. It was, I'm being picked on. And, you know, she do have a tendency to tell little stories, little fibs sometimes. And so I didn't think it was, you know, them. I thought it was her. Until something told me, start popping up at the school and see what's going on. So I began to start popping up at the school, having lunch, and come to find out she was being bullied. And she was being picked on. So I began to have to ask God to forgive me for not believing her. And I had to realize and understand that she was telling me the truth the whole time. And so I started beginning to take accountability for my action for not believing her. And I had to sit down and have to talk to her and tell her, that's the reason why I tell you don't tell me lies or don't tell me stories that's not true because, you know, it'll have me not to believe you. But now I see that you was telling me the truth the whole time, so I apologize for not believing you. So I began to take them out of their school. And when I took them out of their school and I began to do homeschool with them, my grandchild began to write in the next couple of months. She began to write. She began to spell her name by herself in less than a week. I said, Lord, I said, it wasn't the school. It was me, you know. And I said, thank you, God, because they tried to tell me I had to have special qualifications to do this for a disabled child. The devil is a lie. You don't have to have special qualifications. All you have to do is have God's will and his wisdom, and he'll show you everything. And I thank God for that, because ever since I've been doing homeschool, my grandkids know how to read and write. My grandkids can read all kind of stuff now, do all kind of things, even from down to this, the last time that I was on when we was talking about the reading level. That reading level, it kind of hit home to me, because why? For the simple fact, I'm like, wow, I couldn't believe that 95% of the black minority children don't know how to read. And I said, well, I thank God it ain't going to be my grandkids, because my grandkids, they know how to read. And I'm telling you, for her to be 7 years old, she know how to read and say, she found her words out. First of all, I teach her how to sound them out before I begin to tell her what the word is. And before I even have to tell her what the word is, she can sound it out, and she got it. And I'm just so blessed, because I'm able to take out the time and do what I'm doing as a parent. I don't put nothing before them. I even sacrifice me being in a relationship with a man or anything. I just them first. And when I tell you I put them first, and it's such a blessing, and it's such the best thing that ever happened, it's a wonderful thing. And it feels so good to teach them. The only thing the teacher do is she come in online for a few hours. The rest is left up to me. And I thank God for this, because it helps. It helps you learn the education with your children. It helps you, do the training. You ain't got to worry about, because then that's another thing. I teach them to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. And I began to notice that they yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am was going out the door. I didn't want that to happen to me. I even tried to explain to the teachers that I wanted them to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. They didn't want that to happen. I thank the Lord for what I'm doing, because my grandkids are very mannerable, very respectful, and I ain't got to worry about, you know, looking over my shoulder no more. And not just that, when the kids tell you something, take it in consideration, because something was happening at that school, and it bothered me, because the adults didn't take it in consideration. But I took it in consideration, me being a guardian. And so if the kids do say something, yes, sir.
So we have quite a few people online. I don't want to be rude to them and not recognize them. So hold your thought. I think you offered us some good information. I noticed we picked up 4639. I think that's Professor Robinson. Welcome to the show, Professor.
Oh, thank you. Enjoying the conversation.
Okay, great. Nicole, let me go to 1098 and hear from him, and then 108, and then we can make our way back around and hear from him, and we'll make our way around. So 1098, what do you think about it, man?
What I think about it, it's okay, but I do realize that here in the state of Tennessee, if you want to homeschool your child, you have to have a school diploma or GED. I guess they lowered the standards on that, but a lot of people are homeschooling their children for whatever reason. It may be bullying or whatever, but, you know, I mean, each his own, you know, whatever worked for them and whatever worked for the child, you know. But, you know, I like that classroom. I'm sorry.
I used to cut up in the classroom, so I mean, you know, but they probably need to whoop my tail a little bit more. But hey, that's where it is. Okay, all right. 1080, what do you say about it, brother?
Oh yeah, me personally, I'm totally against the school thing. I mean, my reason for that is because I feel like it's outdated. I mean, it's in another way. I feel like today's time, they wasting these kids' time. They come out of school and not knowing a whole lot of anything. So that let me know that it's not, they're not doing their job. I'm not against teachers. I'm against the structured system that teachers have to follow.
I see.
They set these kids up. I don't know which age we're targeting tonight, but I noticed in high school, it's a lot of stuff that's happening. I don't think parents are aware of. I got a particular child that comes to school. He's good in sports. There's coaches out here holding kids back from getting highly educated based off their, they're good at basketball. They set the kids down. They don't want them to shine. They want predominantly, they want a good balance of white and blacks on the team, but if it's blacks just showing out and they're doing good, I mean, let the kids play. I see a whole lot of that happening, and that's hindering kids from getting college education based off that.
Wow. Wow. Point well taken, man. Point well taken. I want to come back to that. That's a very good point. That was a time where we had vocational training as well, and particularly African-American males did extremely well in those subjects. They cut it out of the public educational curriculum. We used to have civics, where people understood what was expected in terms of them being a citizen, the legal expectations. Throughout the South and most Southern states, they took civics as a requirement out of their curriculum, the state curriculum, which makes you wonder, why would you do that, unless you're trying to set some – but we'll come back to that, 1080. Professor Robson, comment, sir?
Yeah,
you there?
Doc, I'm here.
Okay.
I wanted to comment on the grandmother and the fact that she took control of the situation and she was able to turn around the results, and it just demonstrates the power that we have when we focus our attention and we make the necessary sacrifices. Like she said, she made the sacrifices, and it's working. And so how do we take and we model what she did and duplicate that effort across the board? It obviously it's working.
Yeah.
And how do we duplicate that?
That's a great question. That's a great question.
How I end up duplicated is because I'm coming from experience. I know what it was like when I was growing up. I know that I needed, first of all, some of our kids need one-on-one help. I'm not saying all of them do, but some of them do. Some of them have special needs, and that don't mean they mental disturbed or nothing like that. It's just some of them need more attention than others. Some of them do have learning disabilities. And sitting in a classroom setting sometimes it's not going to get it because you got to understand something. The teachers have their pet peeves, and the teacher will show more attention to certain students. And I noticed that some of the teachers got issues themselves because I've learned it too. And that's another thing that really got me bothered, because when my grandchild begins to tell me something, it's not that I didn't pay attention to her. It's that I thought it was her, because I know the issues that I was dealing with her coming from, from two different homes, from her being with her mom, then coming to me. So I began to realize and understand that she wasn't lying to me. She was being honest with me. But it took me a minute to get to the bottom line. And when I did get to the bottom line, I had to take enough responsibility to say, look, let me come out of my box and let me go pop up at this school. And when I began to pop up at the school and have lunch and stuff with her, I began to see she wasn't even able to eat her lunch because she was picked on by a white kid. And I'm not racist or nothing, but I began to see what the problem was. And when I seen that problem, I began to be hurt even more because it wasn't her. Here she is. Every time you turn around, she having bad reports on top of bad reports, and I was thinking it was her. It wasn't her. And she said, Granny, I do want to learn. I do what you asked me to do. But she said, it's not me, Granny. Them kids, they picking with me. And it was
Nicole,
true.
So Nicole, you are a case study that we can look at, as Professor Robinson was saying, that establishes the fact that it is necessary for parents to position themselves to partner with their former teacher so that their children can get the maximum out of their education. Now, what happens is per pupil spending is the term or the phrase they use to identify how much money follows your child based on federal money that comes to a local education system, the state money that comes, and the local tax base. So there are three tiers of funding. Hold on one second. There are three tiers of funding. And what happens is, if you're not aware that your child may have some particular needs, and if you're not aware of what should be given, when it should be given, how it should be given, it's hard for you to hold the principal and the teacher to account. So I say that to say it's important that you become a major partner in that process by educating yourself and being aware of those resources and opportunities. Go ahead right quickly, Nicole, then we're going to go to 81. Go ahead, Nicole.
Okay. And you can partner with the teachers, but that still wasn't enough. Because I had partnered with the teacher, we had a one-on-one conference and everything. Mm-hmm. And come to find out, the teacher had issues herself. She said, I just got so many kids in here, and plus I'm dealing with such and such myself, and I'm trying. And she said, she said, Kamaya does pretty good, but it's just not just her. It's a, you know, but she always be the one singled out. You know, so it ain't just that you can partner with the teacher. You got to understand something. Them teachers come in there with issues they self. And
well,
you can sit down and you can have a conference with them, but it's up to you to talk to your kids and have a relationship with your kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a point well established. Point well established. Let me hear from you, 8112. What do you think so far?
I've been listening, and some of it I feel and some of it I don't. I homeschool my eldest daughter. Yes, I did. And not her entire, because we need social motor skills as well. We need to deal with people. We need to learn how, even as children, you start off need to deal with people. Some people won't like you and some people will. It goes from a child in school to an adult. It's called life. And the teachers, too, are people. Then they have special need children. They got some great teachers for some of them. I respect teachers. I really do. And I know some, as the grandma said, does do wrong sometimes by kids because they don't understand about their home. It is their job to talk to their parents, as far as I'm concerned. And it is also our job as parents and grandparents. I just not long ago went to Grandparents' Day. And we had a love. And so it's a two-way thing, and it's kind of lopsided sometimes if we think about it. Mm. And to the professor, I have to apologize to you, sir, because after I got off the radio station, I thought about it. I was being a little bit aggressive because something that you said touch home with me, and it was about learning, and African-American kids or black kids, whatever you want to call them, they all kids. They are then at least, because quote-unquote statistics said that they are the least. Some of the brightest people I know came from the urban American area. Some of the greatest people I know are some of the smartest people out there, and the ones that's supposed to be smart don't know Jack Diddley.
Okay. All right.
If I could jump in.
Go ahead.
I completely understand, and I feel what you're saying, and these are very difficult conversations.
Yes.
And there's going to be some pain. There has to be pain. And the reason why there's pain is because we care.
Yes.
And so we will get through this together. realize that there are some things that are going to touch us in different ways, but at the end of the day, our goal is to help improve the outcomes in our communities.
I just want to apologize to you, like I got a little aggressive, not disrespectful, but a little aggressive.
Well, what about when you beat me up, 81-12? What about that?
No. I'm telling him I do appreciate it. I'm a woman. I acknowledge when I'm in the wrong. We're trying to help the children. It's not about just us. It's about them, basically.
Right.
And tonight
right.
it sounds like we're talking about their education, which is very, very important.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
I want to share something with y'all too. I know if somebody give me a strong allegation about somebody, if something should take place, because when I tell you I reached out to a variety of education of people in the system, across the board of education, and all of them, the director and everything, this problem was like sweeped under the rug. To the point, like, when I told you the principal uphold her teacher, she upholds her teacher. It was like, we're talking about wasn't nothing, and this, you know, never happened. And it really bothered me because it let me know that what my child was seeing and what was happening, it didn't ever happen. And that was kind of wrong because even from down to the state side where the Department of Church and Services step in, they even overlooked it. And I don't think it's fair or appropriate for people to overlook when a child says something and if something was done to a child, they should take that in consideration because this is supposed to be we're supposed to be adults and supposed to protect
right.
on the kids.
They don't do this.
They don't do that.
No, not
Nicole,
all of them. Say some, not all.
Let me say this. Let me say this, Nicole. You're right that there are individuals who are like a sore thumb. They stick out because they don't belong there.
Yes.
So your point is taken. And I'm going to give you, if I could use myself as an example, when I taught high school, and it was in an urban area, young man cussed me out in front of the entire classroom. And when I called his mother up to come see him, you know what she said to me, you all? She said, my son would never do that. I taught him better than that. So I didn't take it personal because I understood that I'm sure she didn't mean for him to go there and embarrass the devil out of her like that, right?
Yeah.
But he's done some lying when he got home. So that does happen.
Mm-hmm.
My point is that there is a tremendous challenge. Why do we focus on urban? Why do we say urban? And you notice this has been a theme in all of our shows. We're talking about urban, because we defined in a previous show what urban means, and it makes reference to larger demographic areas where there are certain people who are on a social and economic level that are impacted by their level of economic stability, as well as their educational level, as well as their social orientation, as well as their political involvement, and so forth and so on. All of these things are germane to your quality of life. We're talking about now focusing on how to educate young people in urban America so they can have a better quality of life and be successful as citizens. That's what Professor Robinson has always focused on since he's been with us, is helping people who struggle. Yes, there are other people. There are rural people. There are people who live in rural America, okay, suburban America. Right now, we're not talking about them. We're talking about brothers.
I want to throw this in here, too, Pastor. As parents, we should read the policies for schools. We should be able to read the policies for schools. We should know the policies, and we should be aware of the policies. You know, back then, I was one of those parents. I sent my kids to school. I didn't read no policies or nothing. But today, I want to know the policies. I want to know the rules and regulations because why? It's been too much going on. When I say too much going on, like, such as issues like, okay, if here it is, I'm sending my child to school, I shouldn't have to send a change of clothes because this is not no daycare. You understand what I'm saying? This is a school system. So it shouldn't be issues where I have to send a change of clothes for my child. You know,
unless,
come to find out.
May I interrupt?
But let me finish, and then I'm going to let y'all go ahead. Because come to find out that the teacher job is to teach. She's not supposed to change the children. That's the nurse's job. Do you understand what I'm saying? I didn't know all of those things.
Yeah.
And come to find out that some of those guidelines was crossed. So that's why it's very important that we learn the rules and the regulations in the school system in case a problem do come about and we don't know what's going on, you know.
Point well taken. Point well taken. Go ahead, 8112, right quickly. I'm going to bring Pastor Wall in here.
Yes, okay. As far as I think about that is this. Okay, the teacher job is to teach, to nurture, and to make sure your children, they are responsible for 8 hours of the day. They are their parent for 8 hours of the day. And discipline, sometimes when I grew up, it did take effect. If they acted out, they got treated at school accordingly. And it is their job. What if one of them had an accident? Then yes. It is their job to find some clothes out the box that the teachers and people done donated and hand it to the kids. What if some kids don't have the money, or their parents, rather, kids don't have money like that. What if their parents don't have the money to send proper attire for their children to wear to school, or they come to school smelly and dirty? Some teachers love the kids enough to tell them, here, take this, go in the bathroom, wipe off a little bit, change your clothes. I admire some of them for that. I didn't have that problem, but there's a whole lot of people in the world that have.
And
I can understand what you're saying, but it's a procedure to it, though, because remind you that I had to deal with that, and that's because of my grandchild having cerebral palsy. But it was procedure. The procedure is you're supposed to contact the nurse. It's the nurse's job to do that part, not the teacher, the nurse's part. Because any kind of incident can take place, and I'm being honest with you. And so it's very serious that you take in consideration of who's supposed to do what and what's supposed to take place.
Your point is well taken, Nicole. There are procedures and protocol. Especially for a child with special needs, they have a certain IEP plan, individual education plan that requires people fill certain roles. Let me go to Pastor Waller right quickly. He's been in and out with us, but he's back with us. Pastor, you any questions or comments so far? I know you've been back with us the last few minutes here.
Yeah, man, I thank God for. You know, it's such a great opportunity to be able to have anything to say. But, you know, I'm not too much in agreement with my own opinion, so I stay away from that. But what I do know is that the crime is still going on, man. And, you know, whatever area you are gifted in and you have a heart to do and please God, I think that's important. And the only thing I do know about the youngsters is on this day, the sun was shining. And when I approached the streets, man, I saw them posted up. And I knew it was very familiar. And I know the cry is that they said, here I am again without saying a word.
Wow.
Is anybody going to come out here and attend to us? That's the voice I heard without them saying one word out of their mouth. They was positioning themselves. I didn't see them sell nobody no drugs, but I know that's what they was up to. How do I know?
How do you
something
know?
Familiar. Yeah, you know. And that's,
been there,
yeah,
done
that's, done. That's not an opinion. That's truth.
That's true.
That's my concern, you know, is about the youth, and I heard you all speaking about it. So, man, when I seen that today, I knew that by itself spoke a message to me. And that message is, who's going to come out here and bring forth an answer.
I'm.
You know? Because in the church that I went to, I remember I came in the church and they were talking and it sounded good.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew the pain that I was dealing with, I needed some action.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're looking for outside. They're looking for action.
Right.
You know, it talks sound good, even make one feel good, but the people are hurting outside. And I believe if the gospel was taken to the streets, I just believe this now, that I believe it would make a difference to the youth.
Pastor Wallace, I agree with you 100%.
Okay.
Hold on, ladies.
1 second. Hold your thought. Don't lose your thought. Let me go to 1080 and 1098 and get any comment there, 1080?
That's kind of hard to follow because, man, there's so many levels of education, kindergarten all the way to college. I mean,
right.
Overall, you know, it's definitely on the parent to do much as possible. And I understand it. What's going on? What I see is, like, I feel like we're working too hard as parents, man. We're so busy working a 9-to-5, and some people working 3 jobs. I mean, you got to pick and choose which one is more important. You got to sacrifice money sometimes. It sounds like we're going with it because it's kind of hard to trust somebody else to educate your child. You know what I'm saying? It's like they can't. I don't really know how to describe what to do about the situation because it's so much money that is out here that you got to chase. It's like you can't be a good parent. I don't trust the school. I don't expect the school to raise my child right. I expect myself, but I wish I could do is have more time to raise it. You know? And that's something I'm lacking in myself personally. I wish I could teach them. I'm probably the best teacher. I'm probably the best hero, the best motivator, all of that. You just have to take time to raise a child. You got to trust the system or what a school system, to raise a child.
So something that we should take from this conversation is two things. You got to make sure that you don't leave everything of your child's learning up to the school. And the school must recognize your right and your responsibility to be involved in that process. So those are two things we can do to help urban young people become successful. We got to change what we've been doing because it's not working. It hadn't been working for them. It hadn't been working for us, and it hadn't been working for them. So those are two things we know tonight that we can do. We can make sure that we foster great opportunities for parents to be partners with teachers and for teachers to be more open and accountable to the parent as well in terms of their role, their formal role. Because your child is right. Nobody can teach your child better than you can. We appreciate what the school system does.
Can you guys excuse me, please, because I'm being interrupted. I have to answer this call.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you so much. All right, thank you. You call us right back when you get through. All right. Great point. Nicole, you're going to squeeze some in, then let me go to 1098. I don't want to be rude to him. He's been patiently listening to us. Go ahead right quickly, Nicole.
I just want to say material things is not what our kids need. What our kids need is time and love and responsibility.
Wow.
So not just that. I can speak from experience because my son, he is 24 now, but back when he was in school, he was pressured. He was pressured into joining a gang while he was in the walls of the school. And I had talked to him over and over and again about the gang system, and I told him, I said, son, if you join this gang and something happens to me and they tell you, look, you got to go put in some work, and that could be on my deathbed. Which one you going to choose? He said, Mama, I don't care what they say. They're going to have to kill me. I'm coming to your side. So I told him, so you need to think about what you want to do in life because you joining the gang ain't going to help you. I said, because those gangs are set up for all the wrong reasons. And so it's a lot of gang violence, too, in the school system, even from down to kids going to school with guns. Parents, in order for parents to be parents, they have to make sure they search their kids' room sometimes. They look in their kids' backpack. They shouldn't just send their kids up out of there and not look in their backpack and see what's going on, or look in their room and check their room sometimes. Parents got to learn how to take enough responsibility, too, also to check their kids' room, check their kids' backpacks and stuff like that, too.
Right. Okay. Great point. 1098, what about it, man? You've been listening
Just listening. Nashville schools, how much did they lose? $7 million or something like that because enrollment is down here?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. That's their shortfall.
Like that?
They said they're going to be short. $7.5 million now for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know what, though, 1098? You have to ask yourself, if every year you're short, like, what did you do with the money last year? What happened that you were not successful with spending all the money you did last year? Now you're asking for more. I'm sorry. Go ahead, 1098.
No, I'm listening to you. A good point. You know, I can respond later, but that is a good question. But, you know, I mean, the question could be asked, but sometimes, you know, you have to follow the money, and I guess if you follow the money, more indictments going to come up. I mean, you've got all these doctors, you know, they want all these $100,000 a year, get their staff the same $100,000 a year. You know, a lot of them, the money that they get is not even worth the salt going to bread, you know. If I'm going to give you that kind of money, you need to be doing some 100% teaching. And I'm not just talking about taking trips and riding around, things of that nature. See, that's the problem. I was listening to one female, and she mentioned ethnic groups. Listen, you know, I don't know how anyone else feels, but, you know, I mean, I don't mind seeing what irritates me or ticks me off. You know, when it comes to me identifying myself, I am an American of Negro descent.
Okay.
This is what I am. I am not an African. I didn't come from Africa.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
You know, I mean, to each his own, but $7.5 million, and then you got them making almost $200,000 a year? Come on. That's where the money going to.
Okay. All right.
You know,
let me
I didn't have a problem in school. Hey, I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna be quiet, Reverend Donald. I didn't have a problem in elementary school. Hey, look here. School was letting out at 3 o'clock, right?
Uh-huh.
They were sending me home at 3:10 because I was whooping them. I'm serious.
Go ahead, Professor Robinson. Go ahead, Professor.
Save the soul of all of them.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I want to piggyback on something that the pastor said, and it was about action. And so as we collect all of this great insight and we discuss possible solutions, what's the plan of action? What's the call to action? That's the first piece. And then I teach entrepreneurship, and one of the things that I tell my students in the lesson is that you can hear the same exact words, and different people are going to experience it in different ways and leverage it in different ways. And I'm going to give you the example. When you said the $7.5 million, the conversation went to, I'm going to say, to some of the negatives associated with it. When I hear 7.5 million, I start to think about the opportunity to help the system save 7.5 million, and what does that mean for the people who bring those solutions to the table. And so one is looking at it as an opportunity, and how can we help to address the problem and benefit from it, however you choose to benefit from it. And the other is not seeing it as an opportunity. And if we identify more opportunities and then start to get to the planning stage that will lead to the execution, we can help to mitigate some of these things and better manage some of the outcomes.
Gotcha. Okay. That's a great point. Now, what I hear in our conversation tonight is there's a great deal of reasonable frustration, right? And what happens too often is the finger gets pointed from school to the house, from the house to the school, and then the school often goes to the city, to the mayor, say, you didn't fund me enough money. And the mayor say, well, they won't let us do this, they won't do that. I don't get enough from the state. And the state say the feds won't cut us out nothing because they won't let us do this. And at the end of the day, it's the children that had a problem, right? What I hear 1080 saying is at the end of the day, when all is said and done, my child is the most important thing in the whole frame of this thing. And if we don't get that child's needs met, then that's where the failure comes. But it started with me as a parent to make sure they get what they need. I appreciate what Nicole, her efforts. She said, look, I'm going to go in and I'm going to find out myself. I'm going to fact-find a mission. And I'm going to take charge of this situation. But I think Professor would agree with me that what's necessary is that we take an approach that is not driven by emotion, but is informed and deliberate, because at the end of the day, we want our children to prosper and to do well. I believe that children in urban circumstances are just as bright and intelligent and can do just as well as someone that comes from Peel Hill or from a economically vibrant community, in a gated community. Yes, ma'am.
I have something God laid on my heart. I think too, when it comes to the child abuse system, far as, you know, calling in to abuse, you know, the system, far as they got to set up for caretakers or either parents, I think it should be set up for everything. Like, because it don't have to just be the parents or the caretaker. It can be somebody in power. You know what I'm saying? Abusing the system or the authority. So I think some of the rules to that system should be set up for everybody, not just for caretakers or the parents, because I think that's kind of basic.
Well, the 1965 Civil Rights Clause covers that. So anyone that's in a position of authority, a government figure or somebody like that, includes a teacher, if they are abusing someone or harming someone, you're right, they can be held to account legally for that. So no doubt there is something in place for that already. But often, though, Nicole, good people do things that are detrimental to themselves and to their children. And oftentimes, with all due respect, is out of ignorance. So one of the things that we can do to help urban young people become successful is to educate parents, those who are the progenitors of these children, and even sometimes as grandparent. It may be an auntie, it may be a family member, someone in your community that has to take their child in to adopt them. Either way, you must understand that there are certain things, and this is what Professor Robson was hinting at, that are successful models. And the more you learn about them, the more you apply them, the better your outcomes. The more consistency your outcomes can come. Now, Charles would agree with me that we need our own school. In other words, we need to control the dollars for our school, and there are legal basis for that. We need to control the instruction. Who is it that's provided in front of our children? There's a legal basis for that. And we need to control what curriculum is. What is it that we're going to teach our children? One of the things we're going to discover Thursday is that from a cultural standpoint, a lot of children in urban America are missing a very important factor to their motivation to want to learn. All right?
But you know,
so,
you remember,
okay, she can't add.
Hold on one second, Nicole. Let me finish my thought. I know you're fired up, Nicole. one of the options in the public school environment or setting is charter schools. But because many parents are, many of them are unaware of how that function, how that works, how it can be a benefit to them, and there's politicization around the issue, because it's seen as a challenge to the traditional public school. Mm-hmm. And it's a public school option, just like homeschooling is, as well as magnet school and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But the point
mm-hmm.
is that I think Nicole made the point well. The more informed you are as a parent in this process of teaching and training and educating for your children, the more you can make sure they get the best out of it. They get the bump that they need. And as 1098 would tell you, there ain't no need you getting all these high flu salaries and what have you. You still ain't getting it. Still ain't, you know, the more you try to teach them, the dumber you get.
Not getting done.
go ahead, Nicole. You're going to say
something. Job is not getting done. I mean, that's just the bottom line on that. You
right.
know, they just, what they say, grandstanding.
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean. I mean, come on now. Come on now. Go ahead,
Nicole.
What are you gonna
say? I'll hold. I'll be quiet.
Right. What are you going to say, Nicole?
But you know, with the program that I had started, it's not just that neither. It's these electronic gadgets. It's like, you know, like I said, some parents is not aware that their children are getting on adult lines and being introduced to predators and stuff. Because, you know, I don't know if y'all are aware of this, but I had started a program because I've seen a bunch of kids that's 7 and 11 years old on a line where men are saying, take your clothes off, take it out. And they is like giving them diamonds and stuff like that. And that's another thing, like our kids are on these all of these social media sites, and
they
some of the parents
on
our and
get
some
away.
Of them are not aware.
You can't blame that on the school because your kids on there talking to different people. They're experimenting. They don't know. Take
right.
the phone out their hand. That's what I got to say.
Well,
mm-hmm.
yeah. You have control over that, don't you?
You're supposed to, and if you don't, then, okay, that's on you.
Well,
can't blame
but
the school
that, but
system
that speaks,
for that.
But that speaks to 8112 is the importance of the parent being knowledgeable themselves and know that you're a teacher, too. Again, I want to reemphasize, as I mentioned, education begins at home. Education
mm-hmm.
begins at home.
I've said that, Pastor.
You may not
many
be a certified teacher to teach in a public school, but you model for your children and you
sure.
provide mm-hmm. them the initial examples. And
I said
and
the same thing you're saying. I just reword. I speak the urban language. And you said, take your phone out their hand. You gave it to them. They didn't buy it themselves.
Okay.
And make
right.
to give them a book. How about that? If you that good a parent,
oh, yeah.
give them a book.
Wow.
I give my
well, let me,
kids
let me,
books
let me
all the
say
time.
This.
Give them a book. Tell
hey,
me he'll get
hey,
off the
hey,
phone
hey,
and read.
There you go. 8112.
I got some downstairs. I got, excuse
you
me, Pastor. I mean, disrupt, sir. I got some grandkids, and I watch them kids because they stay here with me several times. And all
right,
I
right.
seen was that they knew how to do everything on a doggone
yes.
cell phone, and I put a book in their hand, and they couldn't read it.
Well,
and
now,
I got
now,
on
I,
parents. That's a damn
you're
shame.
Being honest.
My life,
8112.
Too bad. I read my tail off. I can read.
Hold on. 8112.
I can write. I may not be as smart as. Yes, sir.
You are being.
Yeah, because I got my heart about that. I blame it. I don't see it.
8112. Wait a minute.
That's your job to do that. That's not the teacher's job to get them no cell phone. They ain't going to buy your kid no cell phone.
8112. You are being brutally honest, and that's what we need, okay? Now, guess what Professor Robinson would tell you? And that is that all the research.
That's exactly what he said. I heard him.
Hold on, listen to me. Listen to me for a second.
Hold my hand. Hold my hand.
He would tell you. Listen to me for a second. Hold my hand now. Hold my, don't don't let me go. Don't
hold
let me go.
My hand, because I need it right now.
Pastor Wallace, you fired up, man. You fired up. Listen, what the research would say is if you sit down and you spend at least 5 to 10 minutes reading to your child,
mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
that will help them develop a language-rich practice mm-hmm. and environment. themselves. Mm-hmm. Provide those type of things as you said, 8112. Take the phone out and put a book in their hand. What am I doing with this? Well, we're gonna learn how to read.
That's right.
But look, watch this. We provide some incentive and we orientate it around the other things they do at home, 8112. This becomes what? A home-based practice.
Yes, it is.
This is what the Reading Initiative in part that Professor Robinson was talking about focuses on is creative ways. You guys are telling us how to help urban youth become successful citizens now through education.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When you buy them toys for Christmas, why would you buy them some foolish gun or something that ain't going to put nothing in their brain?
I don't allow it in my house. Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
You're right.
If you're going to do it now, if you're going to do it, make sure you do something that's they're going to get some benefit from.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, and I'm not suggesting that you should beat yourself up because you get your children other types of toys, but it's certainly you want to make sure that you find ways to make your home a learning. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Your point is well taken with me, Pastor, and I agree with you 100%. I don't like guns. I don't believe in guns, but I know sometimes you got to protect yourself also. But you don't have to.
We're not getting in a gun debate.
Toy to your
I ain't
going to
get in there with you.
And you can do other things. Because what I do is I buy building blocks. I buy word games. I buy sorry games. All the little games I used to play when I was raised up as a child. And those things take for you to think. So if you're thinking, you are learning. And sometimes they got to show you. You got to be shown because you weren't born knowing all these things. So you got to be taught how to play this game. And those are the things I do. I look for different ways.
Yes, ma'am.
I can go talk to a host of the young folks on the street, and they'll say, Mama Diane, A.T. Diane, ain't they mom. But they respect me. Respect is something that you have to make them do. And if you tell them, I'm not here to drink with you, I'm not here to play cards with you, I'm not here to watch you hurt yourself.
Okay.
They will follow as you lead, and some of them will follow you, even though they still may do what they do, as Pastor Wallace said, and do what they do, but they are watching and paying attention.
But I was
making an example too, because I wanted parents to be aware that sometimes they're not modifying what their children are doing. I know me personally, I don't let my grandkids, they got tablets, they got laptops, they got computers, but I don't let them just do what they want to do when it comes to those gadgets. Because I know they can be exposed to a lot of things.
Their mama had them at first. I'm sorry for interrupting you, but you said it didn't start with you. It started with the parent first. Their parent. It takes two people to be a parent. And maybe a lot of times us mothers do the job of two people. So it didn't just start with you. You got them when you got them. But she gave birth to them. She had them for however little time or however long she got them. And then you took over. So now you are the one that is initiating their home giving, their home schooling, their home everything. Because it is up to you now that you took on. And some grandparents ain't all good grandparents either. And some aren't. That's just like teachers. That's life. It's like with everybody.
Okay.
We can point fingers all day, but to me, we're talking about how do we correct this. When you want to correct something, you got to make a plan to do so.
That's true.
But
that's
I was just 8112.
Yes.
8112. You know
Ooh,
what?
Y'all making me hot. Yes.
I got about 10 and a half minutes.
I know. I'm going to shut up.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you guys. Great conversation. I think if you go back and listen to our previous shows, you all are going to hear that much of what you're saying is what Professor Robinson was trying iterate.
Yes.
So I don't think he's offended by that at all. But the good thing is that we're on a good trajectory. Let me do this. Let me spend this last 10 minutes because I want to give Pastor Waller an opportunity to he's been very adherent here and pretty much quiet. But I want to give everybody a chance to have a final word. Let's start with you, 1080. You've been in there with us. As we move forward, any ideas about some things that we can change? What are some things give us one thing that based on our conversation you think we can modify and change as parents in the learning process?
Okay. I feel like right now at this point you gotta first possess wisdom to even teach a child. So what I mean saying that is we might have to wait a couple of years before we start having kids. I think we having kids too early. The child can't teach another child. These kids out here like 17 years old with babies. I mean, you don't have no wisdom to pass that. You're still learning yourself. We have to change the age of having kids. To be able to teach a child, we got to redefine what it means to have a child. You got to have the wisdom to even have a child. You can't just have a child just because you want to have a child. You got to be mature enough to be responsible enough to raise that child.
That's cutting deep, y'all, but that's real. That's real talk. 1098, give me something right quick. We got about 8 minutes before we get out of here.
Well, I really don't have a comment. You know, I just enjoyed the conversation.
All right.
Everything of it. I enjoyed everybody's point of view. The professor, the ladies, especially, you had me laughing.
They on fire tonight.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, yeah, and last but not least, decrease those salaries because, I mean, you paying a person $100,000 a year, basically, hey, they need to be in there wiping some behinds.
Okay, all right. Go ahead. Right quickly, give me about 30 seconds, 8112, and then we'll go to Nicole, 0405. Mama Diane. Go ahead, Mama Diane.
I'm just going to say this. I respect everyone in the swing, and I do what I do, and that's all I can speak upon.
Okay, fair enough. Nicole, right quick, Nicole. Make it short, Nicole.
I think if we take some of those gadgets away, cell phones, tablets, and TV, and put some books in our kids' hands, and spend time reading with our kids, and educating our kids, it'll be so much better.
Great point. Okay. But Professor, final thought here before we turn the floor over to Pastor Wiley.
I love the progress, and it fits the model of going from uncomfortable to comfortably uncomfortable. I will share real quickly with the group. We are getting closer to launching, and I will tell you the city once we dot all the I's and cross all the T's, and I will share with you how we do it in ways that potentially we can help, you know, I can help you to scale and grow some of the things that are important to you. I enjoy the dialogue and I look forward to doing some things.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, appreciate that. Pastor Waller, before you come on, Pastor Waller, let me just say, Mama Diane, I haven't forgot you. I'll be traveling next week, but we're definitely going to get with you. I want to make sure you have all you need because you raised the question. I promise you I'll do that this week. We'll
do
that. Pastor Waller, go ahead right quickly, sir. You've been very patient with us.
Yeah, enjoy the dialogue myself. Great conversation. Pastor Duncan, you're doing a very fine job. I'd like to thank everyone who had a chance to talk. But the number one thing that I've learned about the power of the enemy, which happens to be existent, And I only come this route because of my learning. And anytime someone is in a race and you have a head start, it means that you're way ahead. That's saying you have the advantage. It means you have the advantage of a person. So word of God says, unless Satan should get the advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. So until we become familiar with his devices, then we can't handle him because he's still ahead of us. We have to learn what is Satan's devices. And once we do that, you don't have to worry about change because it's going to take place. But it's only until we find out what is his devices. Now, there's not enough time to tell it all. But somewhere, somehow, I found out that he had devices, Pastor.
Right.
And he used those devices very well, and he go through people while he's using them.
Yeah.
So what are the devices? That's what we have to find out. And I think everything is going to be on the right.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, Pastor, I appreciate that because people get frustrated, man. They get in their corners. They just get angry, and they want to fight everybody. But you're right. When you realize what it is that's holding you back, whatever the device is, you're in a better position to come out of that corner and not necessarily have to fight. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Wisdom makes a way for it. Wisdom makes a way for us. Tell us a little bit about your initiative right quickly in about a minute here, Pastor, and then it'll be time to get out of here.
Yeah, I always, you know, I'm always in the street, and I appreciate, you know, God giving me an assignment to take it to the street. And as I said today, when I had a chance to see the guys, I wasn't doing it intentionally, but just so happened I drove up, and I'm going to share this with the group. Some guys got out of the car, came over to where I was, and they asked me this question. He said, "You won't let us get arrested if we stand here and talk to you, would you?" What were they saying, Pastor Dockery? They're saying, "Are you going to continue to stand up for us?"
Wow.
That's the message out of that. I responded to them, and I said, "No." I said, "They would have to go through me."
Okay.
I didn't ask them what did they have on them. I didn't do none of that. And I'm just saying all that to say that was a cry.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That was a cry to say, "Help us, man. We're going to stand right here and talk to you." I didn't go to where they were. They came over where I was and asked that question while standing on the very street corner. And it's amazing, man. But that's where I'm at. And, you know, just fighting for the rights of the people. I think they deserve someone to be concerned about them.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, as they say, Pastor, the block is indeed hot. And if we can do something to cool it down, we'll be in good shape. We'll be in good shape. I want to thank all of you guys for tuning in with us tonight. God bless you all. Appreciate you. I'm convinced that we're going to make a move. We're going to not only make a move, but make a difference. There are people out there looking for us. You've been listening to Talk Straight tonight. This has been a very powerful episode. We're going to pick up with the other part of this Thursday night, and we pray that you'll be able to join us at 7 o'clock p.m. This is your host, Reverend Dockery, and you've been listening to another episode of Talk Straight. Pastor Waller, thank you, and all of our callers here. Appreciate you guys. And we'll see you next this coming Thursday night.
Hey, they call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up being a man, but I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply